sound is.
Nicole, you want to tell everyone where we've been, mate?
We have been off air for a bit, but there's only one guess where you think we've all been.
There's a reason we disappeared for the last month or so, and of course, it was because we were in Greece. like we've been sort of alluding towards for the last few months anyway. So like so many other Greeks, we migrated back to the old country like the Canadian geese, didn't we?
We did. And look, what a trip it was. We've been talking about this for a while. We're going to catch up there. We're going to get back. For me, it's been 10 years since I've been back.
Was it 10 years?
10 years, yeah. It's been a very long time, but what a trip. I think we both agree that we're still in depression mode, aren't we?
Yeah, look, fortunately, I've sort of come out the end of it a little bit, but very much the first few days, that was unbelievable. Well, I think we're only about a week and a half or so back in. So, yeah, it was definitely a bit of a struggle coming back in. But thankfully, it was short-lived this time around. We've got sort of strategies to get around it now. But look, that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to try and get over those depression blues from coming back from Greece. This is a very special episode of Ouzo Talk because we're going to recap what was an incredibly special trip for us, our very first where we met up in Greece. I mean, as you said before, Nick, we'd been speaking about it for so long, we'd almost made it bigger than Ben Hur in our heads. Did it live up to the expectations for you?
Look, it did. It did and more. It was such an amazing trip. The good thing is we've got thousands of photos now, so we can't forget it. So we can always look
very
back
true
at this trip. But yeah, it did. 100% it did. Look, I think it exceeded my expectations actually in some ways, but I'm sure we'll get through all that in a moment.
Yeah, we're going to talk about all of that. So let's get this party started. What do you reckon, mate? Should we get into it?
Let's do it, mate. I'm thirsty.
Let's do it. Yamas.
Stini Yamas, mate. Welcome back.
Welcome. That's really sweet.
What do you think of that?
That's sweet. Like, okay, so just for context, we're looking at it's a shot glass, and it's sort of yellow, orangish.
Looks like scotch, doesn't it?
It really does, and it's not, is it?
It's a Tsipro from Ipiro, but it's from the island of where Ali Pasha was born.
Okay.
And his house, or where he lived, I should say. So it's in Yanina, and it's made of cinnamon honey from that region. So yep. The honey is made from bees who feed off pine trees.
Okay.
So it's got that little bit of a pine taste, honey taste to it, and the tsipro from that region. So I had a sip of it. It's beautiful. I actually love it, so that's why I had to buy a bottle.
It goes down really easy, and I've got to tell you, you don't get that real spirity sort of aftertaste or that feeling from it. I feel like this could be potentially dangerous if you sat down to drink a bottle. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Look, it's not very spirity, like you said, but it just goes down so easy. And they're the flavors of Greece, you know, cinnamon, honey, tsipro, all mixed in one.
It's like the rakomelo that they make in Athens during winter in Psiri and, you know, across a lot of the region, actually. But if this was warmed up, it would taste exactly like that. I really like this one.
Yeah, maybe we should warm it up. It is getting pretty cold here, and I could hear thunder in the background. I don't know if you could hear that.
Yeah, there is thunder happening at the moment. Just to, you know, just to really highlight the point that we're no longer in Kansas anymore, as they say. We're not in Greece anymore. We're back in Australia. Yeah. It is winter. We're at the back end of winter, obviously, at the time of recording. So within a couple of days, we'll be back into spring. Thank God. Yeah. And we can keep working on that tan of ours, mate. What do you think?
Yeah, that's great. How ironic. We're in 40 degree heat, beautiful beaches, blue sky. Now we've come back. It's cold, lightning, starting to rain.
It is.
So
it's so depressing.
Yeah, it is.
I've got to say, when we first got to, because we spent the majority of our time in Kerikeri, as we normally do, but when we got there, as most people would know, there were fires happening there, and it was 45 degrees on an almost daily basis for a period of about 2 weeks there. And, I mean, Corfu was on the news in Australia. I was getting messages from people who weren't even Greek messaging me saying, are you guys all right? You know, did you make it to Corfu? Is everything sweet over there? And, I mean, where we were, fortunately, it was fine. But, yeah, there were some pretty bad fires on the island, which, you know, generally is par for the course, you know, during summer. But, you know, what an experience again, though.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I hear you with the fires, because I got the same messages as well from so many people that said, but the way it was portrayed, I guess, in Australia for it, it was that Greece was on fire. The whole country was on fire.
Yeah.
And I said, no, it's just a little pocket of, I think it was northeast of Corfu. Nowhere near residence, I don't believe, because we did meet a firefighter that validated that for us, but we'll get into that.
A cousin of ours, actually.
Yeah, a champion bloke. But, yeah, so it wasn't as bad. Like, Greece was still open, for example. There's heaps of places you could go that what didn't have fires. Can you hear that rain coming down?
I was just going to say, you can hear it in the background.
Oh, yeah.
The gods must be crazy, mate.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, that was it. Yeah, but, yeah, so I think when we were there, it was Rhodes and it was Corfu, but it wasn't as bad as the media made it sound. I know Rhodes was bad. There were some evacuations of a couple of resorts as well, but as soon as they come up, they disappeared as well. But now that we've been back, I hear there's more fires again. I think in the news they're saying that might have been deliberately lit, but I don't know. We can't vouch for that. But,
yeah. I think it's pretty safe to say that that's what happens most of the time.
Yeah.
For me personally, though, the most surreal moment in all of that was, in among all the messages that we were receiving, was a message that we personally received from the ambassador of Australia to Greece, checking that we were okay because she knew that we were there. Usually, you get the advice via email or via a message, or you see it in your news feed or something like that. It's like, you know, Australians don't travel here or something like that. We got a personal message from the ambassador.
Go, Alison, you legend. Yeah, that was really cool. Really nice of her to reach out to us. And we are planning to do a podcast. Unfortunately, we couldn't do it in Athens. There were some unforeseen issues. We couldn't get there, unfortunately. But it's definitely on the cards. And we'll have the Australian ambassador on Ouzo Talk.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. And if you're listening, Alison, Australian ambassador to Greece, thank you very much for your concern and for getting in touch with us. Always appreciated. So we should probably get into the meat of it, though. For a start, the obvious question: how's the depression on your end?
Oh my God! Look, I was at work in the office, sitting there staring at my laptop, thinking, "What the hell am I doing here? Oh, bloody hell!" And yeah.
Is that when it started, though, or did it start on the plane?
I probably wanted to get home at that point. As soon as we got home, I felt the cold. It was nice to feel a little bit of cold because it was so hot over there. It was probably the next morning. I got up and I thought, shit.
What have I done?
Yeah, where are we? What's going on? What are we doing here? You know, and you start to ask those questions of yourself. You know, look, we've got an amazing place where our ancestors are from, and we're here at the moment. But look, it probably last for me, it's coming to the end of that depression. I'm getting into routine. I think the quicker you get back into your daily life, it goes away. But yeah, when you look at photos and you hear stories, and you got to tell everyone the story, everyone asks, oh, how was it? What did you do? What did you get up to? I think that's when the depression kicks in as well. So
is the podcast helping or hindering now?
Probably hindering now, yeah. My head's going back there.
Yeah,
now.
Right.
But what about you? How did you get over it?
It's all about getting back into a routine. And fortunately on my end, as I said earlier, it kind of went away quickly. I threw myself straight back into work, straight back into the grind. And within a few days, you know, I've put strategies in place. I've done it enough times now to know how to get around it. So,
well, you know what's really helped? I'm actually starting to plan my next trip to Greece.
That always helps too.
That helps. So, yeah, definitely. We're going to be going back. So
pote me to kalo? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking all of July this time. So very nice. We're still tinkering with it. When is the perfect season to be there? So
that is a good question.
I don't know, because I love the fact that I don't have to spend, you know, 3 months of winter here. August is good, because by the time August comes around, I'm over winter. So I can handle 1 month, June, maybe July. But this time around, I think July might be better in Greece.
Yeah.
I think. But
I mean, August is a tough one, because especially if you've got stuff to do over there, like if you've got any kind of family or business interests or anything like that,
yeah,
everything shuts down. Like,
yeah,
everyone's true. On holiday in August. So if you want to get any work done, or you want to get any paperwork done, or you want to chase anything up, it's a write-off.
Yeah.
You've got to be there in sort of June, July, or, you know, September, really.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, in July, you're right, things are a little bit cheaper as well. Mm. I think August, everything just goes up, astronomical. I don't know, we're still tinkering with that, but I'm thinking July, all of July might be the sweet spot, or half of July, half of August. Coming from Australia, that is, because I don't like winter, as you're fully aware. I hate the cold. So I can handle maybe, 1.5 months of winter, and then I can get out of here. So I don't know. We're still working on it. But at this stage, it's going to be all of July, I think, going back.
It's a work in progress at this stage.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what did your travel plans look like. Obviously, we met up, and we met up in Corfu, but what was your plan from the beginning?
Well, my plan was not to plan too much. That was my plan. So we were going to base ourselves out of Igoumenitsa in Ibero.
You were a big group.
We were. There was 9 of us, yeah. Wow. So me, my kids, my sister's family, my mum, my cousin, his family. And there's a couple of boys that I have coffee with down at Brighton. Mm. They were going to be there as well in Ithaki. So that was a loose plan. Igoumenitsa, it's all the beaches in Sivota, and then head over to Corfu, catch up with you. And then we're going to go down to Ithaki because I had a really cool festival on over, I think it was August 5 and 6, which is an annual event. So that was it. That was all my plans. Mm. And everything else is going to be ad hoc, whatever we feel like doing.
It's a good way to be, I think.
Yeah, definitely. But the other plan was we're just going to stick to the Ionian.
Mm.
West Coast, Ionian for 6 weeks, yeah. And we're going to have Igoumenitsa as our base. That's what we did. And it was a fucking fantastic time we had. And what an amazing part of Greece as well. Like, I love that part of Greece. And again, we always say this, you can't go wrong. The whole of there's not one bad place in Greece. There's not one shit beach. Honestly.
Yeah.
Everyone talks about how they've seen the best beach in Greece. Look, they're all good. They're all 9 out of 10s, 10 out of 10s, you know. But we'll get to that. It's going to be my question to you, what makes a good beach? But we can talk about that later.
Good stuff. Well, on my end, we went, as I said, we spent the majority of our time in Corfu, but we hit a few of the smaller islands, Erikusa, Mathraki, Othoni. You know, for us, it was obviously a lot about seeing family over there and reconnecting and whatnot, but we just had such a great time. And it was great to see you guys over there. It was in a different setting. We'd spoken about it for so long. So, yeah, the fact that it managed to happen, we managed to make it happen, was fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. And look, for me, it was 10 years since I've been. And you're quite regular. You're virtually going every year now, aren't you?
Not if the prices keep skyrocketing like this, though. Because, man, did they fucking gouge the prices on this trip? It was crazy.
Yeah, the airline fare, they hit us. And it was in the news today as well. I think the Australian government mentioned
Senate inquiry into cost of living, including airfares.
Correct. There was a discussion on Qatar wanted to have an extra 21 flights a week out of Australia. Mm. And a couple of the airlines in Australia didn't warp. Convince the government to not allow them, therefore...
Well, one of them did anyway.
One of them, yeah. Thanks, mate. Should we mention his name? No.
Let's not mention his name. Everyone knows who it is.
Who he is. Cheeky bugger.
Yeah, well, look, at the end of the day, if there's an extra 21 flights coming in and out of here, a lot of them will be going to Europe as well, onward journeys through Doha into Europe. You can't tell me that that's not going to push the price of tickets down, having that competition, surely.
Oh, 100% it will. And that's the reason why they didn't want them to come in.
Mm.
Yeah, the airline said, no way. We want to keep these prices up. But I think things will change. Surely they can't be this expensive next year.
Fingers crossed, because we've got to do it all again next year.
Yeah, no, it is. Oh, it's crazy what they've done. But look, it didn't stop from people travelling, didn't they? There was people everywhere. I think they've broken more records in Greece with numbers.
They have. And believe it or not, I was reading yesterday that Greece was actually the top travel destination in Europe this year, beating it to Italy and everywhere else. It's no small feat.
Yeah, really. I read another article as well that all the super yachts used to go to Italy for the last several years, but they're all in Greece now. Yeah. So Greece is number one for all the super yachts. And we can vouch for that because we saw...
we bumped into one.
we saw Jeff Bezos' boat.
Yes, we did.
He was there as well. He was around Ithaki. Nadal, tennis player, was there as well.
So Magic Johnson was back again this year.
Back again, yeah.
We bumped into a family on a very isolated beach as well, on a yacht as well.
Yeah.
It was just us and them.
Definitely, yeah. That was, a massive catamaran. That was huge.
It was massive.
Yeah, it was an Israeli family, and they had, 2 months, and they decided to spend it in Greece.
Yep.
Great family.
They were very nice. Great to chat with them in the middle of nowhere on one of the most secluded beaches you could ever imagine. Mm. It was surreal, wasn't it?
Yeah. Who was there? Was it My Greek Odyssey? The Odyssey. Odysseus apparently went there.
Well, one of the places, one of the many places.
Yeah.
we can talk about that.
Yeah, we will. We'll touch on it.
All right. So we mentioned the flights. How did you actually get there this time around? Who did you fly? What was the experience like?
Yes, as you know, it was a massive group. There was nine of us. We ended up going with Emirates.
You could have chartered a fucking flight.
We could have. Yeah, we could have. But actually, it was probably one of the best trips to Europe I've ever had. Yeah, sitting in economy, I should say. We went with Emirates, and I guess our question was, or maybe a question for you, what do you prefer, leaving at night or leaving during the day, in the morning?
Leaving at night. 100%.
Yeah, I don't know anymore because we used to have that theory as well. Leave at night where you don't have to spend night's accommodation and so forth and you can sleep on the plane. But we left in the morning and it was such a good trip.
Yeah.
And one of the main reasons why is the entertainment system was that good.
Mm.
We had so many movies. They actually got a channel now where you can watch live sport.
Yes.
So watching live rugby league games.
Yeah.
We're watching Greek movies as well. And it went so quick.
Mm.
I don't know if it was because we had the barrier. There were so many of us.
Yeah.
But we were up, we're alert, I didn't have to sleep, and we virtually saw, you know, 3-4 movies to get there.
Yeah.
I think that was the key difference for me. So now I'm in two minds. I actually maybe prefer leave in the morning. So you're alert rather than trying to sleep, because I can't sleep upright anyway.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I've done this trip a number of ways. I've done that morning flight that you just did with Emirates a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
I usually go with Etihad. Mm. And prefer to go of an evening. I think the flight is EY455 that leaves Sydney at about 10 to 10 mm-hmm. of an evening.
Yeah,
I've figured out basically how to maximize the time. So by the time you get to Athens, you're alert, you're ready to go. Well, I've figured it out basically now. It might just be because I'm used to it, but I much prefer to leave of an evening. Get on the plane, stay awake for the first 4 or 5 hours, watch a couple of movies, have dinner. Fall asleep, see how long I can do that for. It was a little bit harder with two kids this time around, but even still, managed to get through it pretty well. And by the time we got to Athens, my wife and I were looking at each other and we were saying, you know what? That was fine. We're good. From there, though, this is where it gets interesting because the flight from Athens to Corfu, as you probably know, is probably about 45, 50 minutes max. But we had a layover of about 5 hours between that flight into Athens and then the onward journey to Corfu. That was the killer.
Mm.
So by the time we got to Corfu, we were fucked.
Yeah.
So, and that's what we were telling everyone there. It was like, yeah, we were fine when we got to Athens. But once we got on that plane to Corfu, it'd become a nightmare by that point.
Classic.
It's just a 1 hour flight.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Usually the layover ends up killing you. But look, yeah, we left in the morning. We got to Athens at night.
Mm.
So I was awake the whole time,
yep.
Watching movies. I'd do my standard 2-3 hours. I'd go to the back of the plane, do my stretches. But the other point is the planes are better than newer, which means there's less recycled air now.
Yes. This is on the A380.
A380 now. So A380, yeah. So they, as you know, back in the day, all the air was recycled. So you'd breathe all that, and that would be causing you the jet lag and so forth and feeling like shit. But they're actually adding somehow that they get new fresh air, oxygen in there, and that helped a lot.
Yeah.
So that was my routine. Watch a movie, eat something, go at the back, stretch, hamstrings, quads, calves, go into the bathroom. They have this, because remember my face and hands used to get really dry.
Yeah.
So they've got this moisturizer in the bathrooms now. So I put that on, my face, my hands, feel refreshed the whole time. So I did that every 2-3 hours. Watch a movie, stretch out the back, talk to someone. And it went really quick. But the 787 aircraft apparently even better.
Well, that aircraft in particular is, the cabin pressure is supposed to be at 4,000 feet or 4,000 meters, something like that.
Mm.
Whereas most other aircraft are about 8,000. So that's significantly more oxygen that you're breathing at that level. So it stands to reason that you're gonna arrive feeling a lot better, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. And they're the aircraft that go Perth, London. I think it's Sydney, Rome, direct. So, yeah, definitely. So that could have something to do with it. Better aircraft, better entertainment system. I'm going to try it again. Again, I haven't really flown economy since I've left an airline. This is all new to me.
Yep.
But on the way
back. Welcome back to reality, mate.
Yeah, bloody hell. I had to turn right getting on the plane. But but coming back, we flew at night and it was fucked. It honestly, I couldn't sleep. Stiff neck, maybe because of my height. I don't know. I'm 6 foot. I couldn't sleep at all. So I had to try and stay awake in the night. But if you left in the morning, you had a great night's sleep and you had all day on the plane using the facilities, eating and so forth. So I don't know. I'm leaning more towards leaving on a morning flight.
Sure.
Again, people from Australia. So it's good to be different.
So that's two different perspectives, both with good reasons, I think. Let us know what your procedure is. What's the optimal way to get out of here? Is it a night flight? Is it a morning flight? Let us know at uzotalk@outlook.com. It's one of those things that everyone's got an opinion on. And if you're going often, it's in your interest to actually figure it out and be like, okay, I've got my plan. I know what I'm doing.
Definitely. And that's the thing. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there do it quite regularly and everyone's got their own routine, their plan. So I'm curious, to listen to what you guys got to say out there.
What was the food like on Emirates this time around?
Yeah, it was good. It was edible. it seemed quite good.
Yeah.
There was plenty of flight attendants always serving you. But that's the thing with these Middle Eastern carriers. Mm. As you know, with every airline out there, one third of the cost is fuel, one third is staff paying wages, the other third is everything else. Mm. With these Middle Eastern carriers, that their fuel cost is next to nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they're paying stuff all because their countries are virtually built on oil.
Yeah.
So they can afford to throw in so many flight attendants and upmarket the food and all that sort of stuff. Mm. So look, the food was quality. It was good. For economy, it was really good, actually. Yeah. I had nothing really to complain about. I'd go into the galley as well. They had heaps of nuts and crackers and chips, and they had fruit as well, cheeses, anything you wanted. So it was unlimited. So I definitely didn't complain about the food. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
But I didn't drink as well. That's one thing.
I don't either, actually.
Do you find if you drink, it just really drags you down?
I only did it once, and it was in 2007. And, I mean, even then I didn't drink that much. But, I don't know, not interested in drinking on board. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I felt better. That's when I'm maybe putting it down to that. I didn't have any drinks. I had plenty of water. Actually, water was the key.
Yeah, definitely.
A shitload of water.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, what about you? How was your food on Etihad?
Pretty good. I found that usually your best option is going for your Asian and Middle Eastern dishes as opposed to the westernized stuff. So like your standard, you know, beef dishes with mashed potatoes and all that sort of thing. Those Asian and Middle Eastern ones were really good. So whenever you had something like a biryani or a, noodles or something along those lines, that was infinitely better than what the standard, you know, sort of Western fare was. Either way, though, like they were good. I didn't have any complaints this time around either.
You're a standard chicken or beef man, or do you tend to mix it up?
Well, I'll tell you something. The most annoying part of being on the aircraft this time around, with airlines trying to cut costs, they don't give a menu anymore.
Mm.
So basically, your flight attendants are just coming around and saying, effectively, you know, that old classic line, chicken or beef or fish or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what does it come with? What is it? You know what I mean? So they've got to sit there and explain it to you, but it would have been nice to have said, well, this is what it is. It's beef with this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Chicken
pasta. Make the process a little bit more efficient, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see them coming around. I sort of lean out of my seat and have a look and see what the people in front of me are eating. And that's how I make my choice.
You see, here's the kicker. So we were on the bulkhead because we've got the baby as well now.
Uh-huh.
We were sitting right at the bulkhead, so we were among the first served. So we didn't. I'd usually do the same thing that you do. We couldn't see anything in front of us, and we were the first ones served. So we would need to sit there and, you know,
so everyone's looking at you.
Yeah, exactly.
So you had 20 heads looking at you.
That's right.
What the fuck are you? And did you order the same thing just to rub it up the people behind you?
No. I didn't think of that. We'll do that next time. just piss people off. Yeah. No, we would share stuff as well between, and the little one would barely touch his thing, so we always had that as a fallback option.
Yeah,
you know, which is usually like nuggets or something like that.
Yeah,
safe option.
classy. Look, overall, we had a great experience going over there.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Great.
So they've done well. Airlines are improving all the time, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
So what did it feel like when you landed in Athens?
Well, before we talk about that, one thing that I've discovered on this particular trip is I have warmed to the idea of the AirTag. Have you jumped on the AirTag thing yet?
No.
For this trip, I thought I'm going to try the AirTag in our bags. just in case something happens and I want to, you know, I want to figure out, you know, where our bag's gone. Oh, you want some wuzhou? Here you go. Mm-hmm. You're empty there, mate. Yeah, I jumped on the AirTag bandwagon.
So tell me, what is it and where did you buy it from?
Just went to the Apple store. Mm-hmm. You're basically low-jacking your bag, right? Mm. So it's putting a little device in there and it syncs with your phone and you can check where your bag is all the time.
Wow.
Now, as long as it's within range of Apple phones or something like that, or within range of your phone, even if it's in range of other iPhones, it'll ping you. So you'll be able to see where it is. I did lose it in Sydney. I couldn't see exactly where some of the bags were because it was so far off on the tarmac and whatnot, so there weren't many phones around, you know, to be able to scan it. But particularly when we got back, as soon as we were back in Sydney, I could see exactly where my bags were and when they were coming out of the carousel and all that sort of thing. It was fantastic.
So is it like a GPS, is it, on your bag?
Almost, yeah. Yeah, very, pretty schmick.
So even if you're nowhere near your bag, you can see where it is?
Yes.
If it gets lost in another country, you can see where it is?
Yep.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know how much money we spent at Qantas trying to develop an app so the customers can follow where their bags were?
Oh, was it Qantas?
Hey, mate, we used to, this is like 10 years ago, maybe yeah. less, 5 years ago. We'd spend so much money. We had Amadeus companies come in. How customers can track their bag, which we thought was a great customer experience.
Yeah,
bloody Apple come along and give you a little thingamajig, chuck it in your bag.
That's it.
Fantastic.
Little token.
What did it cost you?
So I bought four of them. I think it cost $150. I think it was. So you get a pack of four.
Oh, right.
And you just stick it in all your bags.
Fantastic.
It was perfect. It was perfect. Jump on that bandwagon. I think it's pretty handy to have.
Because I didn't understand people, friends of mine that were traveling, were going on about this AirTag and complaining where their bags were missing and they can see where their bag was, but none would do anything about it.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you talking about? How do you know where your bag is? What is it? So that's how it works.
Yes, wow. It does.
Okay. Nice. Yeah,
jump on board. I mean, we're not sponsored by Apple or anything like that, but
not yet.
The reality is these things are pretty handy to have. So if you can get on that next time you travel, you're doing yourself a favor, let me tell you.
Yeah, nice. Good one, though.
Sorry, I interrupted you, though. What were you asking?
No. So how did you feel when you first landed?
It's always a great feeling landing back in Athens, and I always feel as though you've got to land back in Athens first before you go anywhere else. Otherwise, you really don't feel like you're in Greece. Emirates actually does a direct flight from Dubai to Corfu now via their budget arm, Fly Dubai.
Yep.
In theory, I like the idea of that. I'd love to just go direct from there. But part of me also feels like I kind of want to stop in Athens just to say, yep, I'm here. But look, it was fantastic to show up there. The thing that always hits me when we get to Athens, when you walk out that door and you walk into that terminal, there's a very specific smell that Athens Airport has and Athens in general has. And it's from the smell that they put in the cleaning liquid that they have or something like that. It smells clean. It smells it's very distinct. And every time I smell it, it takes me right back there.
Really?
If I go back to, you know, my thoughts around, you know, being in Athens, it's the first thing that comes to mind.
Really?
Okay. I don't know. There's just something welcoming about
smell,
it.
Smell, okay.
It's
I'll
the smell.
Keep an eye on that. I'm usually congested when I get off. My nose is all blocked and my cheeks are swollen.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. I'll keep an eye on that, mate.
Well, how was it for you?
Yeah, no, I loved it. It just puts a smile on my face. As soon as you land, and even the customs staff, they're all just really friendly. I found they're really friendly, really nice. And I remember the ladies that cleared my passport and so forth, they said this saying, right, which it didn't quite click at the time. I think, what did you just say to him? It's like a farewell greeting. The whole trip, everywhere I went, I heard it. And it was such a really nice thing. And they'd say things like, Galisenehia. I heard that everywhere. And I thought, fuck, how nice is that? What do you think that means, Galisenehia? Like,
well,
good progression?
Strictly speaking, it's a good continuation. I get the sentiment. You know, it's obviously a positive thing. We don't say it much here, but it's definitely something that's said in everyday conversation over there.
But it means so much. It makes a lot of sense in Greek. But trying to translate, it's not that easy, is
it? Yeah, you're quite right. Like I said, it's more like a continuation or, like you said, progression or something like that.
Like moving forward, you know, have a great moving forward in life, in what you're doing and everything. It's like a positive connotation to keep on going sort of thing. And I loved it. Everywhere, even shopkeepers, I'd get a frappe at the local frappe place in Ubanitsa.
Yep.
She'd say, Galisinehia, Galisinehia. I heard it. I thought, how nice is that?
It's the little things.
It is. And I thought, customer service in Greece is just, for me, just blew me out of the water. Mm. It was fantastic. Even the customs people, because I've gone through, as you know, so many countries. Like, US is the worst, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm a criminal. They're coming in, they're interrogating me. What are you doing here? Well, all that sort of stuff. But there, they're very welcoming. Yeah, welcome to Greece. Yeah, we'll clear your passport.
Yeah.
I always have a really good experience coming through. And the queues were good. We went straight through. Taxi rank was fine. It was like a standard airport taxi rank. You jumped in the cab. Cab driver was a bit of a character as well.
Always.
laughing, cracking jokes, you know, telling us, you know, what life is like in Athens, but in a funny way.
And complaining, no doubt.
Complaining.
About everything.
How hard they work. But they do it in a comical way.
Yeah.
Like, he's probably having a whinge, but it just sounds funny.
Yeah.
But for us, it sounds funny. That's the experience I always get. As soon as we come in, yeah, it's just it's a good feel, good vibe. Yeah, they're having their whinge, but yeah, I love it. I love going into Athens, and I hear you.
It also feels really reassuring every time we show up there and everyone's speaking Greek. Because all of a sudden, you know, obviously we use Greek either as code here or just in our family groups and whatnot. To hear it being spoken everywhere also is really reassuring and feels like home. That's the other thing that really stands out for me. And instantly we try to, you know, in my family anyway, as soon as we land there, it's like, okay, no more English. It's all Greek now. It never works, but but we try. We make the effort.
Definitely. Look, and I'm on your page there. I definitely said, I'm going to try and talk Greek the whole time. Mm. And my Greek improved a lot.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. And then the more you use it, it got better. And even my kids, they know no Greek, but they started conversing in Greek, picking up a few things.
Even I saw it. In yourself and with the boys.
Yeah, it just came natural.
Yeah,
love it. No, it was good. Yeah, Athens, again, great city. But my other note is, so when we landed in Athens, we stay there for 2-3 nights. My theory, or my next trip now is, I'm not going to spend no nights in Athens when I get there and on the way back. It's good to leave Athens, right. I think.
Mm.
We got a couple of theories on why. Me and my mate Sabas were talking about it for a while. But
bit of wuzzle for me as well.
Yeah, get in there, mate. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Do you like to spend a few nights in Athens when you land, or?
Usually I do it in the middle of the trip.
Oh,
so just go back.
Yeah.
You know, because usually, I mean, to line up the way you're leaving with something that's going on in Athens, like someone's at the Bouzoukia or there's a concert or there's something, it's rarely going to happen. So usually it's like, oh, okay, something's happening in Athens this weekend or something. I'll usually make the trip somewhere in the middle, but I don't really have a policy on it. Whatever's going on, you know, whatever's happening, we'll react to it.
So we got there, we spent a few nights, which was great, but I think it's a nice way to leave because Athens is such a good city and there's always something on, especially in summer. There's always something on, and I think it's a fitting farewell when you spend 3, 4, 5 nights in Athens.
Mm.
So you can get all your shopping done and
definitely.
And get out there. So,
well, here's to that. Yamas.
Yeah. Jeez, mate.
Won't be the last trip, let me tell you.
Well, my plan is to go every year now, so.
I'm glad you said that. Because you're in the position where you probably could do that.
I can, and you should. Definitely. Yeah, and I've been telling everyone, more trying to convince myself that I'm going again. So as soon
tough
as
the battle, convince yourself.
Yeah, well, I've got to get the airline ticket now. So as soon as the ticket sales come on, I'm going to pounce.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to go all of July.
Okay, so you got to Athens and you guys went to Oumenitsa, which is where you have an apartment, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like living with 9 people in one spot?
Well, my mum used to tell me the story. When they grew up, they only had one house.
Of course she told you this story.
Yeah.
She's like, I used to live with 15.
Yeah. Well, she did say, well, there was she said 9. That was the number.
Really?
She had, well, there's 6 brothers and sisters. Her parents, and I think her father's mother was there as well.
Sleeping on a dirt floor and walking 10 miles in the snow and in the heat to school and back, right?
You know what? It's not far off. And she did say those stories, and she actually showed me. We did go to the village where they're from. And unfortunately, no one lives there anymore. However, a few people are going back for the summer and they're rebuilding. So remember my mum used to... she used to donate money, and the money was to rebuild the church, rebuild the school that she went to school in. And we did go back at Dekabedavgustul, so which everyone goes back. So they've built roads now, so it's quite safe to go back. Normally they will do roads off cliff faces, but yeah, and we actually went. We went to her house, which unfortunately the forest had overtaken it. But you could see there was a door down the bottom where all the cattle would sleep, and up the top is where they would live.
Wow.
Yeah, and that home, I think we worked out, was close to 200 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and then we went into the church where she got christened, and that was quite amazing.
And that's still working? Is that still...
It's still there, yeah, yeah. Still operating. So I'm related to everyone there. Like, we're all like third cousins, fourth cousins, second cousins. Yeah, once you know your family tree, who your great-grandparents were, you could work out. So everyone had a part in building this church. So there's, I think there's five churches in this town, but the main church is where she got christened. And I found out that my grandfather's grandfather was buried there as well. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's a lot of history in that church.
What did that feel like for you to be in that area, the house and the church?
Yeah, good question. I was more there for my mum because she did say she's in her 80s now. She said, look, she might not come back to Greece.
Mm.
So it was probably the last time she was going to visit that her wow. home and the school that she went to. The school's done up, so... There's a committee now, and they're trying to create tourism in the area. So there's an area for rock climbing, for hunting. Mm. So the school now is essentially going to become more like a hostel for people to stay overnight and so forth, to do their rock climbing and so forth, because they do treks now up the top of the mountains. But, yeah, how did it feel like for me? Look, it was quite overwhelming, I guess, being at the bottom of this... Looking around you, and there's just all mountains all around you, and they're all pine trees.
Yep.
You could, my nostrils felt like the size of, I don't know, 50-cent coins. I couldn't get enough of the air. The air was so clean.
It is different there.
Even the water, the Vrisi there, natural cold spring water. I couldn't get enough of that water as well. I don't know. I felt alive. Felt great to see where my mum used to tell me the story. It was more about her. I wanted to get stories out of her as well.
Yep.
I said, tell us where you just hate the cattle. And she'd point to the top. She goes, that was it. And I tell my kids, and it was like a 4 or 5 hour hike. You'd zigzag up this mountain where the good crops were. And she'd say, all we had was water and cheese. That's what we had for the day. So we'd go up and we saw it. And just watching her run up the mountain as well. She's like 82. And she's running up the mountain, unaided, had a smile. She's like a little girl again.
So like now she was running up the mountain?
Yeah, now. Wow. Yeah, walking up. She's like, I couldn't keep up with her. I go, Mom, slow down. She said, yeah, I'll show you. This is my house, and this is where these neighbors lived. And down here, this happened, and there was an incident here. I'm trying to record this as well.
Wow.
And she's pointing to the peak. She goes, yep, there's a track there that we can go up if you want, but it's going to take us a good 4 or 5 hours to walk up. And yeah, I think that was it. Just watching my mum, like, she's like a young girl again. Like, she'd gone, stepped back in time. And yeah, and hearing all the people who lived in this area, how we got a connection to them. I thought, oh, wow, is this who lived here? Because a lot of those people live in Australia now. Mm. Some of them are like, judges in Canberra and solicitors in Sydney and so forth, their ancestors. But yeah, look, it was just amazing to go back and to see where my ancestors were. There was also a couple of Italian soldiers that got lost during the war. They were the only non-Greeks that went into the area, apparently. And some of them got shot, and they showed me where they buried them. We didn't go up there, but I thought, wouldn't it be nice to let these Italian families know that these are some of someone's loved ones here?
Mm.
So they're unmarked graves. So it was quite moving hearing all those stories. But look, I think I've only touched the surface of that town. I'm definitely going to go back every year. And I want to go to the grave where my grandfather's grandfather was buried as well. So, yeah, but a lot of it's not kept.
Yeah, it's a project for you.
It is, yeah. There's a lot to do there. But I think it's building connections with people from that village as well. I think that's the bigger thing.
The first thing that comes to mind hearing that story about your mum and how she... looked like she was a young girl and, you know, she's got this spring in her step. Is I remember that story you said about, you know, when she first moved out here and how all she would do was cry, you know, because of the way, you know, because of the difference in the lifestyle. Hearing that story and then seeing her in that environment there must have been amazing for you and for the kids to be able to see her.
Definitely. Oh, definitely. And you're right. It was great to see it through my kids' eyes. And for my kids to experience where mum was a little girl and grew up. But yeah, great point that you made. Yeah, she cried for 3 months and she lived in Tempe.
Yeah.
And Tempe was full of factories, train tracks, pollution. Mm. And to think that she came from this valley.
To Tempe.
Yeah, clean, beautiful air, water, amazing produce. And I think we mentioned in one of our other episodes where they picked good stock to come out to Australia.
Yeah.
And looking at my mum, an 82-year-old running up the mountain, unaided, still able-bodied.
Yeah.
Mate, definitely, they had the best produce, the best air, the best water, which made for great, healthy people. But look, I think I've only touched the surface on this town, but definitely going to go back every year and explore and maybe try and see what I can find around that house. There might be something there, memorabilia.
Definitely.
Something like that.
Definitely. Amazing story. Well, yeah. I mean, so you obviously went there a little bit, well, really only about a week before I showed up, but we did meet up in Corfu. And that was a pretty, for me personally, that was a great moment. You know, we'd been there, had a chance, you know, for about a week to settle in. And then, you know, you and I were texting for a few days saying, okay, it's going to be this day. And then you boys showed up on the boat. Tell us about coming into Corfu, into the Limani there.
It's actually an amazing view coming in, like all the buildings and seeing the old castle. But look, it was really good. We could see, I think I knew what car you're in, what colour car you're in. And we're on the boat, we're sitting there on the boat. As we got closer, oh, I think that's him there. There you are. And I saw you come out, had your arms folded, your feet folded. I could see you had your thongs on, your glasses on. Okay, there he is. Yeah, it was great. It was good to see you. Then we walked off, and then your son, Philip, fucking jumped out of the window like Spider-Man.
He did jump out of the window, actually.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was really good. Oh, it was just
imagine doing that here.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe, seeing it from the other side of the world. We've been talking about it, and finally we're here.
Mm.
We're going to go down to all these towns that you've been telling me about. You know, you've been talking up these Euroses. You've been talking about how great these towns are.
Did it live up to expectations is the main question.
Look, I think it did, plus more. Yeah, definitely. Look, we can talk about the food and even the town, Lacones, even just the history
village,
of it. Yeah, the village. It was just... So the people that came from that village came from Laconia.
Laconia. Laconia and Mani. Yeah, that's where they came from.
Mm.
So they settled... Yeah, the first settlement came from those groups, and there's still a connection there. So Lacones is part of Bajo Kastritsa, overlooking the bay of Bajo Kastritsa. So, there's still a connection there, and one of the residents of the village, Vasily, has created his own museum there. Well, not his own; it's for the area and for the village, and he has done an absolutely unbelievable job of curating all of this stuff, all of this history, all of these photos, all of these artifacts from, you know, coffee makers from, you know, from turn of the century, to uniforms, to desks from the old schools and all that sort of stuff. It's unbelievable to see. And he's just done it off his own bat.
Mm.
And believe it or not, I actually walked through there on this trip at 1:30 in the morning with an Australian family from Melbourne.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
They were there from Melbourne, and they were interested in seeing the museum, because I told them, like, yeah, there's a museum up there. And they're like, oh, we'll have to look at it tomorrow. I'm like, well, I can just ask Billy if he can take you up. He'll take you up right now.
Mm.
And we went up. It was brilliant.
He does. He looks like a museum curator, doesn't he? He's got that Doc from Back to the Future look about him.
The white hair. Yeah, the white hair. That's a good point.
Yeah, no, champion. But, go on.
Well, you mentioned the food. Your boys sampled the local fare to the nth degree. You know, they don't stop eating. But what did you think of the food? I only heard good things come out of your mouth, but I want to hear what your official take on it was.
In Corfu, in general?
In Corfu.
Fantastic. Top notch. The Euroses were, I think I've been hearing you talk about this for years, how good the Euroses are and why they're so unique in that part. We ended up going to Corfu town.
Mm.
He took me to this place and I thought, oh, here we go. You know, I was been waiting 5 years for this or whatever it was. Unwrapped it, smelt it. Oh, yeah, smells good. We did the firm test. Okay, yeah. It looks solid, you know. Took our first bite and it just felt running down the side of my cheek. I thought, oh, my God. And I cannot lie. Look, it was fucking amazing, Eros. And the way you described it, I think you're very very good in your descriptive words. It is exactly how you described it. The juice they put on it, I think, just made
the salsa. Yeah,
yeah, because everyone can have the fresh meat, the fresh chips, and the pita. Some pitas are better than others because they put a bit of flavor on it. But the salsa just topped it off.
Well, before you go on,
yeah,
I've got a clip here that I think everyone should listen to because you were skeptical, and Kelly, the Eros queen herself, was also skeptical to some degree. So I think we should go back to that to see what you said at the time and then come back to your opinion.
Okay.
Let's have a listen. In Kerkira, it's also the salsa as well, which is, it's almost like a tomato sauce, but almost like a gravy as well.
Oh, really?
To some degree. And ask, I've had
celebrating
too. I am, seriously. I've had friends show up in Corfu trying it there. And if they're Greek and they're not from there, they don't get it. They hate it.
Yeah.
It's but anyone else that try, they're just like, no, that's sacrilege. That doesn't go in a pita. That's, it's like bullshit, mate.
If you know, you know.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
And there's like canela in it. There's all the spices. Really?
I don't know about that. Maybe he's
fancy.
Cinnamon.
Yeah.
No, now he's pushing it.
No. It's like pastizada. It's awesome.
Tom, I'm not so sure anymore.
Dude, it's awesome. Believe me. See, the combination of that.
Canela.
Yeah, I don't know about canela.
What is it, a chai latte? Calm down.
Too sweet.
But see, that goes in the pastizada there as well, the kokini store. So, it's all of these spices.
They put a quill of canela in there. That's a bit different, isn't it?
Just a little bit of a... Yeah. I don't know. They won't tell you what they put in it, but I know that it's there.
Okay.
Jeez. Thing called spizzeriko. So Corfu's got this thing called spizzeriko that's basically a spice mix.
Yeah.
And they put that in it.
It's wow.
All of those things. The combination of that with the tzatziki just makes it.
Really? The salsa. All right, we get to
That's on
take
my
me
list
there.
Now, yeah.
So I've got it. So double bread with salsa.
Double everything plus cinnamon. Interesting.
And cinnamon. I don't know about the cinnamon. I'll try it.
It's just a little bit. I'm not. It's not
into a French toast.
But it's going to taste a little bit sweety, won't it?
No, there's heaps of cinnamon in lots of savory dishes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's awesome.
All right, I just can't work it out. Okay.
You're going to try it when you're
I will
there,
try. Wow. Okay, if I can take some of those words back.
So,
look. Okay. Now that you've everything that you've said about it, it was true. To the point where I asked so many questions around what is the zumi that you put on there.
Yep.
To the point where I had to go and buy some. Well, in fact, your mother got it for me.
So what happened was Mum had actually gone, because Mum was there at the same time as us. She had gone and bought some spizzeriko, because you buy it from a pharmacy, believe it or not. They're the ones that actually do cut it up in the right amounts. Talking about it as though it's like drugs. It kind of is to some degree.
And I'm
really
smelling it at the moment.
Yeah, so he's got it right here. The thing is, they'll never tell you what's in there 100%, right? But there's definitely cinnamon in it. There's definitely cloves in it. There is definitely a little bit of...
There's nutmeg. Nutmeg in there.
There's a lot of different stuff in there. And this is the smell that usually accompanies things like I was saying in that clip, pastizada, which is the traditional kokini store in Corfu. They usually do it with kokora.
Yep.
Or beef, or whatever you want to do with it. But that's the taste that goes so well with the tzatziki and the pita over there.
Oh, and you're so right. I don't know what it is. It's just, it brings the meat out. It brings everything out more. It's just beautiful. To the point where I've got two batches here now. But I'm gonna try and make it in bolognese sauce. Mate, your mum's the best. Your mum rocks. As soon as I talked about it, bang,
she'd already bought it. And she's like, just take this one.
Yeah, I go, no, you bought it. She goes, no, take it.
She's like, I'll go get more.
It's like we're dealing drugs here.
Yeah, I know.
But it's herbs.
Spices, yeah.
Yeah, mate, it's great. Look, you've got to try it. My kids tried it, and we had to go back to Corfu for a particular reason.
Yeah.
We needed more basketball shoes. Actually, no, he forgot his hat.
Yeah.
Long story. So I forgot his hat at
back
one of
for
these.
His hat.
Yeah, long story. Hat and glasses. Anyway, we had to go back, and while we're there, we had two each, and we went to that crema place as well that you brought us to, mate. How good was that crema? Far out, and you got to do both now.
100%.
Any trip I go to Corfu now, you got to do the double. gyros, and then you got to go to the dessert and get a crema. Beautiful.
A custard, yeah.
Custard. So you got the chocolate and the vanilla one.
Yep. Well, thank you to Ninos da Verna in Corfu Town for helping me settle this bet. Not that there was any money involved, but I mean, that place, I mean, you sat in there with us.
Yep.
That's one of our favorite places to eat, Ninos. And it is just, it's one of those places where you go in and it's whatever they've cooked for the day.
Yeah.
Multiple dishes. They might have sofrito, which is another traditional Corfu thing.
That was we had that as well. We had everything.
Sujukakia. Yeah, we let my wife order, which is always dangerous.
Fantastic. I love it when she orders.
Yeah, sujukakia, yemista, and all that sort of thing. And when they run out of it, they run out. That's it. You know, you're just there during that period. And then, you might be able to get a pita or a shuvlaki or something like that. But how good was it?
It was fantastic. And all the other dishes that you order as well, we couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah.
And I think what Greece were playing Hungary in the...
water polo.
Yeah, water polo World Cup final.
Mm.
So me and my son plays water polo. So we're trying to watch the two TV screens they've got, and people are pouring out. It was so busy. And very memorable, very memorable. So we'll be back. What's his name? Nino?
Nino, yep.
Nino, your legend. Fantastic. We'll be back there. Don't worry about that.
I'm glad to hear that. And the cremes as well, Alexi. Just another hole in the wall place, isn't it?
It is.
And it's just, I mean, you went with the traditional custard to start off with, but I managed to twist your arm to get a chocolate one too.
Yeah, and what was the third one? The
risogalo.
Risogalo. Yeah, I had all three. Had to have all three.
Oh, did you have the risogalo too?
Yeah, had that as well.
What did you think of that one?
It was good. Look, risogalo, it's a bit one of those funny things. You're used to how your mum makes it.
Yep.
So no one ever makes it as good as your mum.
Yeah.
Because that's what you had since you were like, 2, 3 years old.
Mm.
But look, it was great. Quality. But the original vanilla one, crema, the best.
And how good was it seeing that huge block of butter in the store as well up on the table?
It's exactly how you described it.
Yeah.
Everything the way you described it is exactly how it is. How I pictured it in my head is exactly how it was. This big, look like a volcano of butter.
Yeah.
People would come in with a massive butter knife, cut a bit off, wrap it up in a bit of paper, and they're off.
That's it.
Yeah, mate, fantastic. The food was great. Corfu, thing of like a... Whoa, hear that.
Jeez.
Okay, nice.
Welcome back to Sydney, yamas.
Yeah, yamas, mate. Fuck, let's keep on drinking.
Definitely.
Thing I love about Corfu, it's like you could be in another country. We went to your cousin's to Greek night.
The uncle. Yeah,
the uncle. The
Nafsikata Verna.
That's it. The music they played. It was so unique, so different to the rest of Greece.
Actually, I forgot we went there that night. And yeah, I remember you saying on the night, because they do traditional Corfu dancing there of an evening. I remember you saying, I've never seen anything like this before.
No. Reminded me of like decadent music, with violins, and you could be in like Salzburg in Austria, sort of that sounding music. But it was just so unique. And I thought, you couldn't believe that this is Greek music.
Yeah.
And the uniforms, the outfits that the lady was wearing, which was very pretty, by the way.
Mm.
Very good looking race, you people in Corfu. I think I mentioned that a few times, didn't I?
Well, my son certainly thought so that night, didn't he?
Oh, that was so funny.
He had the camera in his hand and he was mesmerized by her.
Yeah, well, I've got a video of Tom's son recording the dances and there was only women dancing. So it was funny just watching it.
He was mesmerized.
Yeah. That was the top night. Look, the music, the dress, the outfits that you guys wear, very unique. So every part of Greece, it could be like you're in another country. The only common theme is the language.
True.
What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And again, I mean, we've spoken about Corfu at length and, it's that combination of the culturally Greek heritage that we have coupled with the Venetian and the French, but also an English influence as well.
Mm.
And you can see it in the architecture. You can see it a lot in the music. In a lot of the stuff that we eat as well, we've got a culture of making ginger beer as well, which is very distinctly English.
Mm.
We play cricket. And a lot of the food is very Italian.
Is it a heritage-listed cricket pitch you're mentioning?
It's the only... That cricket pitch in Corfu, in Corfu town,
mm-hmm.
which is in between the Liston and the Frurio, the fort, is the only UNESCO World Heritage-listed cricket pitch in the world.
Mm.
Believe it or not.
There you go.
It's that mix of all of these different cultures that's come together to make this really unique Greek culture, ultimately.
Mm.
It's something we're very proud of.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so you should. It's a great place to visit. And that's why it's probably so popular. You know, there's so many people go there because of that uniqueness as well. But the whole of the Ionians like that too.
It is. It's very similar on that side, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And you would know better now, obviously, having been more recently to all of those other islands. How did it compare?
Definitely very similar. The colours of the buildings changed the further south we went, I think. There was more blues, I think I'd found. Up where Corfu was, there was more the pale.
That yellow.
The yellowy, the terracotta look. Mm-hmm. And then the further down, the change of the buildings, the colour of the buildings changed as well. But look, they're all very similar. So I think there's only, what, seven main Ionian islands as well. So we've managed to get to six of them now. So, yep. But they're all very similar. We went to an amazing festival in Ithaki as well.
Mm.
And it did remind me of the music and the vibe of Corfu as well. Mm. And it's a village called Stavros. A guy I have coffee with at Brighton, I don't know if you know Peter Cash.
Mm.
Yeah, so he's from that village and he invited us to that town. He goes, come in, there's a festival. I think it's the 5th and 6th of August. It's over a weekend. All the money they raise. Actually, you know who was there? George Paxinos.
Oh, yeah.
I bumped into him.
Fantastic.
Yeah, caught our guest there as well, yeah.
The Greek neuroscientist that mapped the human brain.
Correct.
If you haven't heard that episode, go back and have a listen.
Great episode. Mm. And he can dance, mate. I was watching him dance.
Yasure Yorgi.
How old is this guy? Look at him. He's jumping around.
Well, if anyone's got the key to eternal life, it must be him.
Definitely.
certainly from a neurological perspective, right?
Whatever he said, mate, it's working.
Well, he's single-handedly responsible for us cutting back on our drinking, isn't he?
He is. Yeah, definitely. He spooked us that episode, didn't he?
He really did.
Yeah.
Obviously, you saw him living it up over there. He's done pretty well for himself.
Definitely. He's living a great life. And he lives in a town near Stavros, or Stavros, I think it's called. But the whole idea of this, once a year, most of the people that lived in there migrated to South Africa, US, England, Australia, or Great Britain, I should say. And I remember I walked into this town as I was walking towards all the tables. It was all outdoors, all al fresco. I could hear four different types of English accents within about 20 metres.
Yeah.
But all come back. All the Greeks, the Ithaki South Africans, the Brits, the Australians, which was us. We had like a massive table of about 20 of us.
Mm.
And it was great to see. And all the money they raise goes back to painting the church. Helping building the or refurbishing the local football teams.
Local field. Stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a good cause. So when you hear stuff like that, you don't mind paying whatever it is for Euros's. So we ended up getting Souvlakia. So yeah. We just went nuts with Souvlakia. Yeah, we're getting, 50 at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I went back. My cousin went back. And then Savas ends up buying a bottle of Ouzo, Plumari. They have Plumari there.
Beautiful. Love it.
Or through Ipiro. Yeah. Guess what they drink? Guess what Ouzo they drink?
Through Ipiro?
Because I asked for Plumari. They didn't have it.
Bilavas?
Yeah, Bilavas.
Same in Corfu.
Yeah, Bilavas was huge.
I told you.
Yeah.
I told you.
But it tasted okay there.
Yeah, it must be that sense, in that context, it must be okay.
Yeah, it tasted okay.
I mean, it's good here too, but...
Yeah, it's okay here, but we got... I prefer Barbagliani and Plumari, but
we've done all of them at this point.
We have.
Yeah, we can afford to be choosy, can't we?
We can.
You talk about those barbecues and you talk about the souvlaki. After you left, and we'll talk about the night that we spent at the Cafe Neo, Efthichios.
Oh, yeah, great night.
But the barbecue that he had there. But I actually ended up being manning the barbecue there a week before we left. All night from 6 p.m. till past midnight, turning souvlakia on that thing, anakodo souvli.
Mate, you were like the adopted son of that village. Everywhere I went, best enough stralo. Mate, yeah. you're like the main guy there. You're like the import, but you're like the adopted son. No joke. Everyone loved you there.
I can't say anything.
Mate, they did. Like, what's going on here? He's like, Tom's
he knows
like,
everyone. He's in with everyone.
Are you like the mayor or something? You're not telling me something? No, but it was a great trip. And look, thank you for putting us up as well.
No problem, mate. No problem. We couldn't see you guys homeless and homeless and hungry.
Yeah, no, you definitely looked after us. And how good was it in the morning? Again, as you, most of you know, I love to have my coffee. Yeah. My routine was get up in the morning. My kids were asleep. I go for a walk, and it was that footnote down the road.
Manzufi.
Yeah. About 20 meters down the road. On the right, ordered my Freddo. Mm-hmm. So it took me probably about...
So this is the entrance to the village of Lacones, just past the... I mean, if anyone's ever been there, there's actually a traffic light leading into the village. And right on the left-hand side overlooking that view, there's this bakery slash supermarket slash coffee place and whatever. And you sort of set up shop there, didn't you?
Oh, perfect. Every morning I'd walk in. They'd have beautiful, fresh spanakopita. Mm. And I'd get a Freddo. And I'd sit there. And the view, I kept on pinching myself.
180-degree view in front of you, isn't it?
180-degree. But you're so high up as well. Mm. And you're looking down. It's like you're on top of the world.
Yeah.
And you're looking down, looking at the boats coming in and out. It was just, I kept on pinching myself. I go, what is this place? Yeah. I can't believe I'm having my coffee here in the mornings. Yeah.
Why don't we do this every day?
Yeah. Normally I'm staring at Bay Street or Grand Parade having a coffee. But here, I feel like I'm on top of the world looking down at this amazing part of Greece.
Lord of all creation.
Yeah.
I joined you a couple of times on that because usually like I just wake up and have a coffee at home, just sit on the balcony. But... Mm-hmm. I ventured down with you as well, and I actually really enjoyed it. You know, it was the first time that I spent time, you know, in there, you know, having a coffee and just looking at that view from that vantage point. And, mate, if we, you know, if you and I were there all the time, you'd be doing podcasts there every day, wouldn't you?
Oh, definitely. It's an Instagrammer's dream there.
Like, definitely.
The quality of the food and the amazing views every morning. Like, can you think of a better way to start the day?
Well, I mean, the only way that it could get better is if we went for a swim, literally, you know.
Which we did.
But, yeah, I mean.
And how cold is Palio Castrița?
Well, that's the way I like it now.
Bloody hell, that was fucking cold.
The first day we were there. That was cold. It got better. Actually, but just before you guys had gotten there, it was really warm and I hated it.
Mm.
But when you got there, it was cooler. And it was more to my taste. For you guys, it must have been a bit of a shock to the system. But
yeah,
how clean was it, though?
Oh, super clean. Yeah, super clean. And look, it is cold. So the cold I'm used to as well, because we went for a swim in the Hironda River, which is a river.
Beautiful spot.
Yeah, amazing place where the mountain water comes through into a river and there's a restaurant right opposite. So we'd swim in there and it's freezing in there. But
I think the rain's back.
Yeah, Jesus, look at that, eh?
Every time we talk about something, you know, some beautiful place in Greece or something, you know, we found interesting, this is what happens to us.
Is it maybe a sign of we're crying or something?
Yeah.
Jeez. Bloody hell.
No, let's just keep going. Keep drinking.
Yeah, keep on drinking.
Oh, sorry, a hit on the river.
Yeah, hit on the river. So, do you know the history behind a hit on the river?
I don't, actually. Tell us.
Okay, it's a mythological story where you'd pay the ferryman to take you to the afterlife.
Oh, right.
Yes, apparently Hercules sailed up this river. And it's a famous mythological story. And they made songs about it as well, about you know, not paying the ferryman and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the reason why we're in ancient Greece. When people die, they'd put a coin in their mouth or over their eye or something like that.
That's something that your family still does, isn't it?
They do, yeah. Mm. Not too long ago, I had an auntie that passed away and I took her back to Greece and they still upheld that tradition.
Wow.
So... But yeah, this river is very famous and at the cleanest waters. You actually go and you collect water in your plastic water bottles from this river to drink. It's so clean, it's so fresh, but it is freezing. And it's probably nearly as cold as Palio Castrița.
Wow.
Yeah, it's that cold. But that's what it reminded me of. Going to Palio Castrița, open beach, and it was that cold. I'm thinking, there's no underground currents, is there? It's like we're in Antarctica in a way, wasn't it?
Going back to that first swim that you and I had in Palio Castrița there, to sort of illustrate the point, at some point in that first swim, my extremities went numb and started hurting. It was so cold. And, you know, so you'd get out and it'd be like 38 degrees.
Mm.
Get back in and it's freezing.
Yeah.
But how alert were you afterwards? And how good did you feel afterwards?
You feel great. It's like an ice bath.
Absolutely.
because it was so hot outside. But yeah, it was free. I had to swim to warm up.
Yeah.
I literally had to swim, you know, 10, 20 metres out and come back in just to warm up.
Well, we went quite deep in as well. We were 50, 60 metres in, which we wouldn't, you wouldn't do in Australia, obviously, because we've got, you know, issues with sharks.
Yeah.
But, you know, over there, you're diving straight in. It's no issue, is it?
But the other thing as well, did you find you're more buoyant in Greece?
Definitely.
Same here. I felt like I could swim forever.
It's the salt content or composition of the water.
Concentration of salt, yeah.
Concentration, definitely. That's the one.
Yeah.
What did I say?
I don't know. Constipation?
No. Constipation of water, of salt. No, I think you're right. Yeah, there's definitely more. And yeah, you can just lay there.
Yeah, definitely. And you don't sink. Yeah, it was really good.
Well, the other thing that we did, the major thing that we did, you know, along similar lines, was that big boat trip. So we have some friends, obviously, in Paliokastritsa who have boats. We've got a lot of friends who've got boats in Paliokastritsa, actually. But the Michailas family there have a number of boats. And we were originally going to go to Paxos, which you did with your family anyway on another day. But we ended up, because it was a little bit choppy that day, the recommendation was to go the other way. And it was to go to, as we said earlier, Othoni Mathraki and Erikousa, which are the northernmost islands in Greece.
Or west, northwest?
Yes, in Western. Greece. Yes. Yeah. So we ended up taking that trip, and it was outstanding, wasn't it?
Fucking unreal trip. So these are the most western part. This is the most western part of Greece. One of the islands we're at, I think we were closer to Italy than mainland Greece.
That's right.
So that's how far, you know, in the Adriatic it is. But yeah, amazing place. And the good thing is they're not very commercial as well. I think that's what made it better.
There was virtually no one on these islands, was there?
No.
Well, the first one that we stopped off at, well, I think it was Mathraki, it was genuinely a few shops on the shoreline and a coffee shop. And that was basically it. And this beach there, wasn't it?
Yeah. What about the first place we went for a swim, where your cousin went spearfishing?
Yeah.
What did they call that island?
El Diablo or something.
El Diablo?
Like that. I think it was that. Yeah.
Something like that. And there's a story behind it, because a couple of settlers went in there and they lasted about 10 years. And
they brought goats, and that was it,
goats. Yeah, and I think it was too harsh to grow crop or something like that. And they left and said, this is like the devil or something like that. That's why they named it that way.
Yeah.
And who came to greet us? A couple of goats.
Actually, yeah, they did show up. So we were right in the middle of these two islands, effectively, where we dropped off our, my cousin Wade, who's a well-known spear fisherman, actually. And he sort of disappeared with attached to his boy there. And and our captain, shout out to Leo Lully for taking us over there.
Leo, he's legend.
Absolute champion, legend. He's a fantastic captain who told us that story as well. Just as he was saying, telling us about that story, the goats showed up. And we were in the middle of these two islands, effectively, where where Wade was spearfishing and whatnot. And your boys, being lifesavers, and I mean, again, the water was pretty choppy that day.
Yeah,
they ended up swimming. I mean, Evan ended up swimming. How far away was that? 200-300 meters.
Yeah, and he got there in no time.
He did.
Look, Arco, and he's on the rocks. He's waving at us, and he's rock climbing. I think, how did you get there so quick?
Yeah, he went there and came back to the boat.
Oh, he could swim forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got that motor on him. But yeah, amazing place. And Leo, what a champion. Like I think what made that trip is all the stories he was telling us. And what about his maneuvering through the caves?
Holy shit.
Eh?
Holy shit. That was one thing that I got to say. Once we got to one of the other islands, he said, look, there's another cave up there. He goes, I don't think we're going to be able to get in, though. He goes, I'll show it to you, but we're not going in. It's too choppy. As soon as we got there, he made the decision without saying, he's going in. And holy crap, this is a 10-meter-plus boat, and he managed to weave it in.
Yeah, we went in, turned right, like a right angle.
Yeah, and there was a swell as well. It's, you know, bobbing up and down in this cave.
Probably had, 2 inches on either end?
Probably a little more than that, I'd say.
Maybe 3 inches. Yeah.
But, mate, it was brain surgery. What a legend.
Yep. Was it the Calypso Caves? That's what it was.
Yes. Yep.
Where Odysseus supposedly landed in the Odyssey and stayed there for 7 years and fell in love with the Calypso.
Nymph.
Calypso.
I think it was a nymph. I think, yeah. And we ended up on Calypso Beach as well, which is where we met the family with the yacht, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, the Israeli family on the massive catamaran.
Yeah.
Amazing place. I actually went, so that beach, maybe we should describe it. It's like a 100-meter cliffs, and I think they're sandstone cliffs. Mm. So I actually went to the edge of the cliff just to feel what the cliff was like, and you could actually rub it with your hand and it was coming off. Mm. And as I was there, I hear this thump. A rock must have landed near me. So it can actually get quite dangerous when you get to these beaches. So yeah, I shit myself. Oh fuck, get out there. But yeah, look, my she leads me to my next question to you. So what makes a good beach? So everyone says it's a great beach, because this beach we were at was probably the, you can't get cleaner than cleaner. So I'm talking 10 out of 10.
Mm.
There's a few beaches we saw, and they say it's the white rocks, the white pebbles. And I think Leah was saying it's the type of white rock where if you can actually make, was it clay out of?
Oh, yeah, the pumice.
Yeah, that's why, and it's got something to do with cleaning the water or something like that. Mm. What makes a good beach for you?
Look, for me, if you've got really good visibility to the bottom, that plays a huge role.
Yeah.
As we hear more thunder behind us. These aren't sound effects that we're putting in, by the way, if you can hear that. If you've got really good visibility to the bottom and you've got that color, which, you know, particularly that on that side of Greece, because a lot of the islands are green as opposed to being very rocky, you've got this blue-green aqua sort of look in the water. The combination of the clarity and that color, and for me personally, it's more about the smaller stones as opposed to the sand. That's what does it for me.
Yeah.
I would much rather have that. And I don't want the water to be warm. Personally, I like it to be a little bit cold.
Beautiful. Yeah, you know, well done.
That's what it's about. What about
100%. You? Look, very similar. So I don't like the big rocks. It's funny trying to go in and watching people or coming
that's
out.
Always funny.
Yeah. It reminds me of what's his name? Peter Garrett from Midnight Oil Dancing.
that's good. Like. That's true.
People trying to come out. If you haven't seen Peter Garrett, Google Peter Garrett from Midnight Oil Dancing.
That's what worth looking at.
That's what it looks like when people are trying to get out of the water with the big pebbles.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. The little ones are good. The little ones are like as big as your, say, your pinky nail. A nice massage on your feet.
You kind of slip into it. It's almost like quicksand to some degree.
Yeah, it is. Mm. It is. And it's a lot better because, you know, where we go to the beaches, you got to clear. You got sand everywhere, in your car, in your shoes. You bring it in your house.
In your undies.
Yeah, up your crack. You know, there's no sand anywhere. So I prefer that type. It's got to be white.
Yeah.
I prefer the white as well. Makes the water clearer.
Mm.
And like you, I like the cold waters now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the warm water. It's got to be really cold. Yeah.
It feels like piss.
It does now. Yeah.
It just comes back to when it's cooler, it feels cleaner and fresher. It just does something to your mental state, I feel like.
Yeah. And I also prefer an enclosure as well, where you can see an end on either side of the beach.
Oh, yeah.
So you're sort of locked in, like a little outlet.
Which is what Calypso Beach was like, as well as Agios Spiridonas Beach at Paleokastritsa, the main, the main beach there.
Yeah.
Because we did also take a boat on another day, you, me and the boys, to Paradise Beach, Hormuz and Stellari. These are beaches that you can only get to by boat. And how good were they as well?
Fantastic.
I think that was day one, actually, or day two.
Yeah, that was a great day trip. But, like I said, you can't get cleaner than clean. Like, they're all 10 out of 10.
Mm.
Yeah, and again, same thing. Look behind you, you've got a 100-meter wall of rock behind you.
Mm.
And then you've got this beautiful, clean water. I think there was boulders coming out of the water, which were climbing and diving off as well. So that's always a novelty, having that on a beach as well.
Mm.
But that was amazing. We had a couple of good scenery around us too, didn't we?
We did.
Eh?
The natural scenery as well as the imported scenery, I think you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Look around. What's going on here, Tom?
There was a group of young Italian girls there who, God love them.
Yeah. A lot of Italians there.
There were. There were. Actually, that's a good point. I mean, there were a lot of Italians that I saw, a lot of French this year, usually a lot of German, a lot of Brits. But the overwhelming one this year for me was Americans.
Oh, really?
Yeah, particularly in Corfu, there were a lot of Americans there this year. And we sort of see them coming through the restaurant, my wife's family's restaurant up there. That's a pretty good gauge of who's on the island.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seemed to be predominantly American, and I would say French this time around.
Okay, really? Mm. Yeah, wow, okay. I didn't notice many French, but yeah, well, the brief time I was with you, they were mostly all Italian, weren't they?
Yeah, I think, yeah, obviously different sort of demographic. You know, the Italian tourists, particularly the young kids, are obviously coming and doing, you know, your sort of, a lot of them, believe it or not, do like camping trips and group trips where they're staying in hostels and whatnot, yeah, as opposed to doing your cruises and, you know, staying in hotels and staying for prolonged periods.
Yeah.
These guys are generally coming for a few days as part of a group and then just pissing off, basically.
Yeah.
But a lot of tourism in general.
And look, one of the highlights was, you know, meeting Dimitra's family and going in the village. Because the village is such a small village. And
we ate well, didn't we?
especially at your in-law's restaurant. How good is the food there? Far out. Ridiculous. And there's no small portions there. You can't say you're hungry. Even if you say you're not hungry, you're still going to get fed.
Yeah, that's the key there, isn't it? I warned you about that.
Yeah, you did. Far out. But even that little cafe where your brother-in-law is.
Eftichio's traditional cafe in Lakones, yeah.
That whole strip. So that's the main heart of the town, isn't it?
It is. It's just a street.
Yeah. And it's the road, I guess the road would have been, what, a walking track back in the day?
Yeah,
and now
probably.
They're just, yeah, so you can't even fit two cars there.
No, nah, it's a single.
Single way. That's where you got your traffic lights,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, correct.
But even just that night you took us out there, me and the boys, I think that's what the boys appreciate. Well, it was a good eye-opener for them as well, where all the tables were full. And there was no iPhone in sight. Everyone was talking. It was that sense of community. And this is where I thought, mate, this is the Greece that I remember when I was a kid, when I used to go often, you know, go back. All locals or whatever it was just that community feel. And I think there might have been a few Spaniards there in that
corner.
There
were actually a lot of tourists in the area as well.
Really?
Who were sitting there that day. It may have been 50-50 actually, locals as well as well as tourists. But it was just really laid back, wasn't it? You know, you had the barbecue going. You had someone there making the souvlaki. This is before I was appointed.
Yeah. Yeah, but the good thing was as well, I saw your wife just get up and help out. And other people were just getting up and help out.
No one
asked them. I could see they were inundated. People would look around. Okay, they need help. They just got up and helped out.
Yeah, that's
They weren't getting paid. They just needed to. That sense of community kicked in.
Start taking orders. Start, you know, bringing drinks out and whatnot. And There's a far more laid back atmosphere that I think. I mean, it was far more pronounced in the way that your boys reacted to it, because it was like, well, how long is it going to take for us to eat here, sort of thing. It's like, well, it's not a restaurant, you know. They're just having a barbecue here, so you know it might take a little bit longer for the food to come out, but it's all about the experience here now, and just having the community feel. And I remember you said to them, take a mental picture of this, because this is what it was like. You know, when I was growing up and coming to Greece and seeing this kind of community feel, I thought that was a really important thing to mention.
Definitely.
And it was like that, really.
I don't remember saying all that, but yeah, it's good. I'm glad.
How many beers have you had?
I don't know. Bloody hell.
But actually, look, the beer. We should talk about the beer afterwards.
We will.
Yeah, sorry, go
on.
Yeah,
we will talk about the beer. But you're right. You summed it up perfectly. And it was one of those things where it just felt like you're belonging. You're part of a community. You're part of a group of people. Everyone was engaging. We met one of Dimitra's cousins who was a firefighter. He was up there a couple of hours ago putting out fires in Northeast, and I think they were on 12-hour shifts.
Yeah.
He might have done like three 12-hour shifts in a row, but he had a couple of days off.
He actually spent time in hospital because of smoke inhalation. So he'd actually been put out to pasture for a couple of days, and then they said, yeah, come back in a few days.
Yeah. But even just that, you had people going out, doing their bit for the community, coming back, and just having everyone there. And the way you described it, all the elderly were in one corner. You called them the CCTV cameras. Yeah. And they looked at it. They were staring at everything. And they think they knew more about me even before I walked in the village. They knew everything about us. And what I also found fascinating was your son. He ran off.
Yep.
You and Dimitra didn't even care. Didn't flinch. Just kept on eating. He didn't even look where he ran to, because you knew he was going to be safe. That whole village was protecting those kids.
It's a very different thing and a very different mentality to what it is living here, isn't it? I mean, that's the only place where I would feel comfortable to say, I can't see him, but I know he's okay. Literally, he would disappear, as you said, and he's, you know, in a back street somewhere playing soccer or whatever with friends that he's just made or people that he knows there or cousins or whatever, and he's fine. And if something happens, whoever's in the vicinity is going to let you know pretty quickly. But the funniest thing for me was after you guys left, we were walking through Corfu Town on 2 to 3 separate occasions. Some kid would yell out his name and come over and high-five him and we'd just keep walking on. It's like, who was that? He's like, oh, it's just a friend of mine.
You know? And he's 5.
So, yeah. Seriously.
Classic. Like,
seriously, man? No, he became a child of the village this time around, mate.
Classic. Yeah. Look, I can see that happening. Yeah, it was just such that sense of community. And when Philip ran off, it was me and Mikey. Like, hang on, where is he? Is he all right? You want to keep? And you didn't care.
Yeah.
It's not like he didn't care. He just knew he was safe.
It's the only place where I would be like that.
And this is where I started to have that spill with my kids. I guess this is how life was like. Mm. This is what I remember growing up.
Yep.
You didn't care. The village raised your kids. Yeah. You know? Everyone helped each other out.
Yeah.
And then they started to relax. I guess it's not about hurry up and get your food and then hurry up and eat and hurry up and get it. You relax. And then every table, they were somebody's. Like one ran all the boats in your area.
That's right.
One guy ran the meats. Who was that? They were on Peter Menaeus.
Yeah. So the boys who did all the meat there. Again, their last name is Michalai as well. It's a common last name in that region. But they were on My Greek Odyssey with Peter Menaeus, and they were showing Peter how to make the numbulo on that show. Go back to the episode on Corfu there, and they were the ones providing the souvlaki and the meat. And they're actually kubari with my brother-in-law there.
And he made us try some new sausages. We were experimenting as well.
How good were they? The chicken sausages.
Fantastic.
And he put like curry in them or something. Adonia and Leonida, big shout out to you boys.
Yeah, well done, boys. Yeah, big tick from me of those sausages.
They were outstanding.
Yeah, and again, it's all the herbs and spices that you put in.
Mm.
You can only get so much fresh produce, but it's what you do with it.
Yeah.
And they were fantastic.
But they really experiment, those boys. They're good at that. Like, they've got their traditional stuff down pat. They're the type that will experiment with your smoking, you know, your different types of woods and your different herbs and your different peppers and whatnot. They're really one of the only people that really look at, like, dry aging beef and dry aging steaks and whatnot, whereas most people will just deal with either frozen or fresh.
Mm.
These guys are not afraid to experiment with all that stuff, and it shows. You know, they were so busy while we were there.
Yeah, definitely. And look, and they are busy in general. We're having a chat to him. He's exporting, I think, even to Italy now.
Is he really?
I think he said that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did.
Interesting.
That was the beer talking. But he's exporting all over Corfu. I think that's what he said.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense.
Definitely in Corfu. I'm not sure about internationally. He might well be.
Yeah. Well, that's what he was saying. He's exporting overseas now. I thought, whereabouts? He goes to Italy. I thought, okay.
There you go.
You know, back to the Italians. I'm pretty sure that's what he said, because we did have that amazing beer that you kept on highlighting, which Corfu beer. The red one was my favourite in the end.
Was it really?
Yeah, we had the red, the green and the black? Is that what it was?
Red, green and the blue. So the Pilsner, the pale ale and the dark ale as well. Listen to that.
Yeah.
More thunder. Uh-huh. Now, yeah, look, I'd been saying that it's the best beer that I've ever had. And again, I could be biased, but
it tasted great.
Look, it was fantastic.
My best beer, I think, I've had a lot of great beers. I'm still a big fan of the Japanese beer, Ebisu, only because I went to the town in Japan where they make it, and they brew it, and I had it straight from the brewery. It was probably the best beer I've ever had. But this Corfu beer, the red one, it was fresh, it was crisp, and it went down easy. When you can drink beer and it goes down easy, it's a great beer.
And it's dangerous.
Was it that strong?
Well, more so from the perspective of your waistline, not so much the getting drunk.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm like, I usually don't drink beer when I'm here, but when I go over there, I drink a lot of beer, and I come back, you know, don't know how many kilos I've put on since we were there, but yeah, not a good look. But
yeah.
I wish they would export that beer. They don't, because apparently it's they keep telling you, everyone keeps saying, oh, they can't export it because it's fresh, so it needs to be refrigerated all the way here. So it's not gonna keep on the shelf, which sucks. But
yeah, you know, another bummer while we live so far away. Bloody hell!
I know.
That's okay. Good reason to go back and have the beer as well.
Exactly. We can't bring everything here. We can try.
Yeah, definitely. Now, look, that was fantastic. That was a great evening, actually. Mm. Cool music, cool tunes, sitting back. And I love the al fresco. You're outdoors. You can look up, see the stars, you can see the water over there. And people, everyone having a good laugh around you and the quality of those souvlaki. Something about the pork souvlaki in Greece as well.
It doesn't taste like pork, does it?
No.
Well, not like here anyway.
It's definitely a lot flavoursome there. We talked about the food. Yeah, we didn't talk about that. They're definitely a lot better over there. And we said earlier, everything's free range, isn't it there?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they don't even label it free range, because everything's free range.
If you had given me that souvlaki that we had there that night and you didn't tell me what it was, or you blindfolded me, I'm not sure I'd be able to tell you what it is.
Pick the cut. Yeah.
Honestly.
Mm.
Yeah, it just tastes far cleaner. It doesn't have that pork stench about it.
Mm.
I don't know what it is, you know. It obviously comes down to the freshness and you know, the origin of it. We've spoken about this before on a number of episodes. We tend to overdo it with our meat here when it comes to marinating it, because we're actually trying to get a lot of those unwanted smells and tastes out of it.
Mm.
You don't need to there. You're literally only using salt, maybe pepper, and some of the boys actually use a little bit of mustard in the marinade over there as well.
Okay.
Which we do here as well, but it's on another level, the pork there, isn't it?
It is. It's fantastic. We went through so many. I think it was at your poor father-in-law, because you guys want some more. Go, yeah, okay, grab some more. And like I said, my kids are eating machines.
Yeah.
You know, they're just eating the house down. I think we've got a video of that, haven't we?
I think
we had about 10 souvlaki sticks on his plate.
That was the best part, wasn't it? You'd just say, give us 20, give us 30, give us something like that. It'd show up, you'd get a Greek salad, you know, and some chips, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, that was it. That was our diet, really.
Yeah. Just,
meat. And all through Ipidor, all I had was sardines and salad.
Sardines.
That's all I had. Fresh sardines. Yeah. Seafood is amazing there as well.
Isn't it just?
Yeah. But, and look, towards the end of the trip, we did experiment. We had Yemi Star.
Nice.
And what's that rabbit stew called?
Stifado.
Stifado, yeah.
Don't you have some?
You had some of that. That was really
good. Tell me about that.
When we have that, that was in Kefalonia.
Mm.
So I said to myself, I'm going to try most Greek dishes that I see on there that I had in my childhood.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was the sauce they did with it. It was, okay, rabbit is very bony.
Yes,
it is. Not much
meat
on it. But the meat, it's hard to explain what the meat's like. Again, it tasted very fresh. So we talk about free range. This is what it would have tasted like.
It's tougher meat, isn't it? And it's more akin to pork than it is anything else, I feel like.
Yeah. So it's probably, say,
and it's very
the leg of a chicken.
Yeah.
Leg of a chicken sort of meat as opposed to a thigh.
But tougher.
Tougher, like a pork, somewhere in between there.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but it was still beautiful. It was really nice. And the sauce I had in it as well.
And the little onions.
Yeah, little onions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
That's the way.
Yeah.
A little pilafi, a little rice with it as well.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. I've got to get back to all my photos. But that was great. That was in Sami. So Sami was a port in Kefalonia where they made Captain Corelli's mandolin.
Ah, right.
Yeah. Great little town. But around there, there's just amazing beaches. Look, that whole area is just fucking amazing.
Mm.
But Kefalonia, again, another amazing place. I haven't been there before, but Miritos Beach, I think it's won 15 times best beach in Greece.
15 times?
Apparently, yeah.
Okay.
This is what the locals were saying. But yeah, another beautiful, amazing beach. Again, nice, comfortable, Xaplostres. I think, what were they?
Ooh, you've just touched a nerve there.
Xaplostres. Should we cover that topic?
We probably should. I think it's pretty hard to
ignore.
It's pretty hard to ignore, because while we were over there, a movement started with, I can't remember which island it started on. Was it Bardo or Samo or somewhere there?
Naxos, somewhere like that.
Yeah, one of those islands over that side. Mm. Basically, the locals have had enough. Going down to their beaches and seeing you know, the local beach bar or some kind of independent rogue operator, just setting up xaplostres and umbrellas, you know, for the purpose of making money, obviously. And they are basically wanting to take back the beach. So they were basically just setting their towels up in between all of these xaplostres as a bit of a protest. Did they call it the towel movement or something like that while we were over there? And basically they're trying to get all of these operators out, you know, and trying to stop that from happening. And it's an interesting argument because when we go over to Greece, one of the things that, you know, many of us have spoken about before is, you know, how good is it to have xaplostres and umbrellas and whatnot? The reality is over the last few years, it's become, you know, the price of those things has become fucking exorbitant, right? And you hear ridiculous things like in Mykonos of xaplostra costing like €1,000 or €5,000 or you know, something ridiculous. The reality is even at €50, that's a lot of money to be spending, right? Even at 20, it's a lot of money to be spending, right? Yeah. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the whole thing?
Yeah. Look, I think the argument was the xaplostres took up the whole beach.
Yeah.
So if they'd taken half
which
the beach...
Which it shouldn't.
Yeah, half the beach, I could probably say that's fair. And if people want to pay that, that's great. Otherwise, you've got the rest of half the beach where you can put your towel and your, you know, bought umbrella and so forth. I probably wouldn't have an issue with that. So the most we experienced for xaplostres was €15 for a pair and an umbrella. Look, that was okay. If you're going to be there all day, it wasn't too bad. The best place we found was called Kokino Vracho in Sivota, amazing beach. And it was €15. And you get that included food.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So we're going to be there all day. So we had our frappedes and we had our food and club sandwiches. So it was fine. Look, I'm happy with that. And I do love xaplostra. Yeah, I definitely would go for one. But the prices and what was going on in Mykonos and all those areas, yeah, look, that's enough for me just to not go to that island.
Yeah.
Just to hear that. So... And I think it did drop. Mykonos did drop by about 20%, I read this year. Milos took up most of that.
I think there was a general switch or a shift in the perception of islands like Mykonos this year because of the, you know, there has been a lot of, let's say, negative press to some degree in terms of the costs associated with going to Mykonos. And now it is effectively one of those islands that is for the rich and famous. And for it's pretty hard to get in there. And it's pretty hard to enjoy it, especially when you're, you know, when you're having to pay all, you know, that kind of money for it, isn't it?
Yeah, Dan, it's probably an island where you go there to be seen.
Yeah.
As opposed to seeing the natural beauty and the beaches and the food that we've just talked about. I guess there's a market for that. I mean, if there's a market for that, that's great. Look, I'm not interested in all that. I love the fact that my ideal trip now for Greece is going back to the village, seeing the old school a way of living. Clean produce, amazing geography like beaches and so forth, and having that sense of community. That's what I enjoy. But Mykonos, I've seen some clips on YouTube. Half of Australia was there.
Yeah.
You go in there and...
Barely Greece at this point.
No. Anyway, but there's a market for that. People want to do that, right? All for you. Go for it.
Absolutely.
Santorini as well, that's fine. There's a market for that. I think Peter Manet said, look, Santorini is a beautiful island. Beaches aren't the best in Greece, but he goes, go June or September, October.
There's
no point going there and paying ridiculous amounts for something where you can get, you know, you're an hour away from another island which has got better stuff, better quality. And that's the real Greece for me.
And that's not to bag Mykonos or Santorini or any of those islands. No. But the reality is it's kind of gotten out of hand. It's a bit much.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But then again, you know, maybe people in their 20s, you know, like all that. It's a good party island, you know. It's like the Ibiza of...
Whoa. He didn't like that one.
That was close. Didn't like that comment. Yeah. Zeus is talking to us.
Clearly Zeus likes Mykonos.
Okay, Mykonos is good. Sorry, mate. Take it back.
I'm going to have some cheese.
Yeah. Yeah, but look, yeah, the xaplostres, look, I love it. You can have xaplostra. There's nothing better. The only thing is when the sun turns and you got xaplostra and the sun's hitting you, I thought, ah, fuck, because you want the shade.
That's when you put the shirt up, hanging from the umbrella.
Yes, that's right, because they've got pegs as well. Yeah, I thought they were there for the receipts, but maybe that's what it is.
Maybe that's what it's actually for. But
yeah. What's your view on the whole thing?
I think there's a place for Xaploshtres in the scheme of things, but there's no doubt that the operators are taking the piss in a lot of this in a lot of this thing. I mean, things are definitely overregulated in Australia, and in particular in Sydney. But I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, a third of a beach allocated to, you know, to have something like that, to have a beach bar or a beach club or something like that here and in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the comment is always the beach is for everyone. It is.
Yeah.
You know, so you should be able to, you know, people should be able to have access to it and be able to lay their towels and their umbrellas and go with the family. But equally, if someone wants to go and have that better, you know, higher quality experience with Xaploshtres, with service to them, you know, with cocktails and all that sort of thing, that's equally as good.
Yeah. You know? Look, it's a supply and demand thing.
Definitely.
To be fair to the operators, if people are happy to pay for it, and clearly they are, then why should they not do that? But the only thing is, yeah,
they're abusing it.
Well, you're right. They are abusing it. I just think you got to give people options.
Yeah.
If you take up the whole beach with Xaploshtres and you have an option, then I think that I have an issue with that.
Yeah.
You got to give people an option.
So. For sure. Interesting debate either way.
Yeah.
Again, let us know. UzoTalkAtOutlook.com.
Yeah. No, it's a good debate, actually. The way the Ionian Islands, the most I found was €15 at the most.
Mm.
There were some for 10. Some were 10 with food, 15 with food. Yeah. But the ones that were €15 plus food, you can see the different clientele as well. Mm. So sometimes that might be the thing as well.
Yep.
They might want an older, mature crowd as opposed to a young, hip-hoppy crowd.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah. But anyway, look,
interesting.
I definitely had my fair share of Xaploshtres. We probably lost count of how many banya we did. I think that was one of the things that we talked about in one of our episodes. You count your European trip of how many banyas, or your summer, how many banya you had, how many swims you've had. We lost count.
Oh, we did as well, definitely. And that's a good barometer, for sure. Let's talk tourism a little more generally as well. I mean, it must have been the busiest year ever in Greece this year. It certainly seems so. I've never seen Athens Airport as full as I did the day that we arrived. It was mental. Did you have the same experience?
100%. It was crazy. People everywhere. But look, we're in Ipiro. So Ipiro was full of locals. Mm. When I meant locals who left work in Belgium, Germany, and come back again. But they're all back. It was, like you said, mental. It was people everywhere. To the point where you had to get to the beach by about 10 a.m. Otherwise, no more Xaploshtres. Mm. 10 or 11, that was the rule. If you got there after 11, you'd be struggling. You'd be in a queue trying to get Xaploshtres. Accommodation, as you know, we didn't book much. So we didn't pre-book. So we went to Lefkada, for example. We did the old-fashioned way. Went to a taverna, sat down and ate, spoke to the waiter, and he's got the matia. They'd usually point you to the direction of who to go and see. And it worked. A couple times it worked. But we did struggle a couple of times where we ended up paying overs, I think.
That's a risk you take, obviously.
It is,
you know.
Yeah. But when you speak to all the people, I say, yeah, look, it's never been busier. Mm. They're knocking people back. And you can see people on the road, the beaches. We did a lot of driving. There were so many people on the road as well. Again, I can only talk of what it was like 10 years ago and what I've been reading, but it's apparently it was one of the busiest years ever for Greeks.
Well, that's one thing I was going to ask you. With your perspective, having not been there for the last 10 years, what's changed in that time? Is there anything that really stands out for you, like particularly in Igoumenitsa and just in general? What's actually changed from your perspective?
Yeah, look, what's changed, it's grown. Igoumenitsa in particular, I feel like it's doubled in size. What I mean by that is there's more cafes and restaurants right on the water. Understand the local a company called Grimaldi bought the port as well. So they're building a cargo sort of area where cargo ships can drop off containers, which accesses the road as well, which goes all the way down to which is an amazing road, which goes all the way down to Preveza and so forth. And there's a road that goes all the way to, I think, Constantinople from that area.
Yep.
So that from that side of thing, infrastructure is improved out of sight.
Yep.
We drove on these roads, fantastic. You know, tunnels, the roads were nice and wide, two lanes.
It's pretty impressive.
It is. Yeah, I feel like, you know, well, it is. It's like a modern Western country now, infrastructure-wise. So this Grimaldi Group apparently have offered to, as part of the contract, they're going to provide a marina for the community of Gumenitsa. So the talk is it could be up to 400 berths. No one knows.
It's huge.
That'd be the biggest in the Ionian if it is.
Yeah, wow.
So, yeah, so it's just the infrastructure has improved out of sight.
Mm.
Yeah, and what about that bridge in Patra?
Ah, the Rio Adirio.
Yeah, yep. I think, did I read right? It's the second biggest in Europe or in the world, suspension bridge in the world.
Maybe.
Apparently it's really expensive to cross.
Look, don't quote me on this, but from memory, I could be wrong about this, 12 euro?
Yeah,
something like that.
I think it was up to about 13 and a half now.
Yeah, it's been a few years since I've been across it, but yeah, from memory, I think, don't quote me on that, it could have been 12 euro.
Yeah, definitely a lot of tolls. They've caught on to the tolls, but it's still the old toll booth system where you drive past, you give someone the money and they come past.
Well, they do have that, like the e-tag system as well. There are lanes for that.
Okay.
The only reason I know that is because, you know, in Athens, when you get there and you go through one of those toll things, mate, they shoot right through there at like 100 kilometers an hour.
Mm.
No slowing down. No slowing down for the e-tag to register. Yep. They're just going straight through. So things are slowly, you know, they've caught on to a lot of things.
Yeah,
you know, and
definitely.
It makes sense, you know, in some respects. We spoke about it a few episodes ago where, in some respects, they're leading some things. In other respects, they're still very well behind. Overall, though, I think that's part of the charm of it. You know, it's just part of the experience. We can't expect everything to be like here. You wouldn't want it to be the same.
No.
I don't think.
Well, the good thing is about Greece, you're still very free. There's not many rules.
Mm.
Well, if they've got rules, they're very lenient towards, and that's a good feel about it as well. It's hard to explain. Where I was driving around, people were just parking wherever. I eventually started doing the same. I go, how good is this?
Yeah.
It feels good, you know. But everything worked. Everyone, no one harassed, no one beeped. Everyone just got on. That's fine.
In some strange way, I mean, we talk about being over-regulated, but in some strange way over there, you know, we talk about the chaos that exists in the driving and in certain systems and whatnot. In some way, there's more common sense in that approach. And it just works, doesn't it?
Mm, definitely.
I find it far more easy to drive over there than I do here, somehow. And it's just like, well, okay, it's safe to do this sort of speed here. You're not going to go over, you know, you're not going to do a speed that is, you know, that's dangerous for the conditions. But there are instances in Australia where you're like, okay, this road is wide, it's long, I can see right in front of me. Why is it 40 or 50? You know what I mean? Like, it should be at least 60, hypothetically.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, I agree. And there's a couple of lanes. So if you're not comfortable, you just go to the furthest lane and you just do your own speed. You know,
that's
if
it.
You want to go fast, let the guy go fast sort of thing. But I don't know what I'm sure it might be higher than what we got here. But I think that sense of freedom, the sense of, like you said, it's not very regulated.
It would be interesting to see what the road toll is over there now. Years ago, it was absolutely shocking.
Mm.
Shocking.
They got better cars now, better roads.
Yeah, look, the cars there, I mean, the cars are really, really good over there. You know, you've got a lot of European cars, a lot of Japanese cars there now that are all in really good condition. The roads have improved out of sight.
Yeah.
You're always going to have an issue with mopeds, you know, Vespas and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
People falling off and whatnot. But I think it would be safe to say that the road toll has improved out of sight since, you know, since those bad years of the 80s, 90s, even the early 2000s. Just, you know, I mean, they're a little more strict on wearing seatbelts to, you know, to start with. I'm sure that would have played a huge role in it.
No, definitely. Look, I hear you. The amount of footnors I noticed, it increased.
Yeah.
Fucking everywhere.
Mm.
But I loved it. How good is it in the morning? Fresh bulgatsa, spanakopita.
Spanakopita, zabonotiropita, lukanopita.
My God. It was the best. Yeah. So that was a really good thing. Frappes definitely died out. Freddo's in.
I've been talking about that for the last few years. I remember we were discussing it, and yeah, frappe is a rarity now.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, it's probably the old Gen X, which is my generation. Yeah. We used to go, that's all we knew. Oh, how cool is this? But it took me, what, 2-3 days to go to Freddo. I got a frappe, and then I thought, give me a Freddo espresso, and it was good.
Yeah.
And they give you a bottle of water as well.
Yes.
I think I was paying €3, which is reasonable, which is okay.
I'm going to be controversial here now, though. Wasn't happy with the coffee over there this time around.
Oh, really?
I mean, most people will just have their Freddo and whatnot. I sort of went onto the... I became a bit Australian and was doing the hot coffee in the morning as the first coffee. That's the one that you have for effect before you have the one for enjoyment, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I just felt like they were weak.
And really?
They, you know, I was asking for double shots and they were... You know, and in some cases they were saying to me, the one you just had was a double shot. Like, really? Mm. Man, all I could taste was milk. All I could taste... Give me one without milk.
You know what it is?
It just wasn't there.
You sound like a new dad, mate. That's what it is.
Is that what it is?
Two kids? No, you need something stronger.
Yeah. No, you know what? But you'd go to the cold one. You'd go to the Freddo and it was fine. You know, it's exactly what the doctor ordered. But in the hot one, it was weak. Like, yeah. I don't know, was the roast weaker? You know, just a lighter roast? I'm not sure. But it just wasn't doing it for me. This time around.
Fair enough. Okay.
But Freddo and Freddo espresso and Freddo cappuccino, that was always on point.
Yeah, definitely. Look, same here. That's what I wanted. Lucky, we love our strong coffee in the morning. Mm. That's how we wake up. But the other thing as well, what about the mezedake with your ouzo? I think that's what blew me away as well. I couldn't believe the mezedake I was getting.
Yeah.
Again, I can only talk about Ipiro because that's where we went up and down and going to little tiny villages. We're paying what? €2, €3 for an ouzo.
And they're coming out with all these dishes, right?
My God. Yeah. Some places were giving us sardines.
Yep.
Two sardines to have with my ouzo. So forget dinner. You just get smashed on ouzo.
That's it.
So one place I was in Ali Pasha's island and we ordered, we're getting ouzos as well. Didn't have any mezedake. Oh, we've run out because normally they cook a big batch of it. And the guy felt that bad, and because I must have looked disappointed. I thought, oh, I wanted my mezze. And he came back with like a warm feta, a warm feta melted cheese. It was beautiful.
Wow.
And he goes, yeah, look, sorry about that, but look, have this instead. I thought, fuck, it's better. And that was just all because he felt bad they didn't have enough mezedake for us. And he got us something bigger and better, and he's apologizing.
Yeah.
So the people, I think, really made it this time. Mm. So they've come a long way from their customer service and helping people. Quality of the food, I think, is standard. I guess everyone talks about the tomatoes. That was very consistent.
You've just touched a nerve again.
Really?
You've just touched a nerve again.
Okay. It's all coming back to me now. Yeah. Fine dining, my God. They've gone to another level.
Okay. I had the same experience. We didn't go to fine dining together, but I had a really good experience after you left as well. What was yours?
Well, again, Ithaki. Beautiful little place in, I think it was called Frikes. It was a beach. So we went to the beach, had a bit of a swim. Was it Frikes? No. Filiatro Beach, actually. So me and my mate Savas, the guy from Brighton, I think you've met him before. Mm-hmm. We call him the mayor of Brighton.
Yeah.
So we went for a swim. You know, there was about 10 of us, big buddy, all of us down there. And we got hungry. So you go to the local restaurant that's on the beach. And this particular, it was a bit expensive, but we ordered a prawn linguine pasta, and it was fucking amazing.
Mm.
It was like a ready sauce, but they had coconut milk through it. The prawns, there was heaps of prawns in there, and just the quality of the dish was just fantastic. Again, I mopped everything up with the bread. It was so good. And even the Greek salad, because we voted on which was the best Greek salad we had, because we had them virtually every day.
Yeah.
And they probably won the best Greek salad we had in this little place as well.
Really?
Wow. They had croutons in them, and the croutons were dipped in olive oil and vinegar, which made them good, and capers as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And,
beautiful.
And whatever they put on there, I don't know, the salsa you want to call it, but the oil they used and the vinegar and stuff, fucking amazing. So,
wow.
Yeah, they've gone on another level. And in Frikes Beach, again, in Ithaki, I don't know what was with Ithaki, but we went to another really cool restaurant on the beach, and they had a mushroom risotto. But they used getheraki as well as the rice.
Okay.
Yeah, and they had truffles. So it was a truffle mushroom risotto. They're probably the best meals I had.
Fantastic.
Yeah. What about you?
We went for dinner for my sister-in-law's yorti, which is Le Capet d'Avusto. So the day before, we actually went to Corfu Town to the Arcadion Hotel. Mm-hmm. Now, the funny thing about this particular hotel is that years ago, not that long ago actually, the bottom floor there, which mm-hmm. sort of is in a very prominent location where you can see the Liston and the Pedro Fanaro, people from Corfu will know, it's where they drop all the carnates at Easter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The bottom level of that used to be a Macca's, a McDonald's.
Fair enough.
So it's changed over the years. You know, there's no place for McDonald's in Corfu. Like, they don't, you know, they're not about that.
Why would you?
Exactly. Yeah. That was my whole thing.
Yeah.
But they've turned it, aside from it being a fantastic little hotel, they've got this place called the Arcadian Bistro now. And when you go to the top level, they've got like a rooftop garden. And we went at night, obviously. It was quite late. And you can see all of Corfu town from there. And it was amazing. You could see the whole Spianada, the whole square, the whole Frurio, Ayo Spiridona, out to Vido Island, out past towards Padokratora. It was amazing. And the food, let me tell you, was unbelievable. So they were doing things like, and again, this is fine dining, but they were doing things like taking traditional Corfu dishes like burdeto, which is a fish dish in a in like a spicy red sauce, which is usually just fish in this particular sauce, and they did that with macaronia, turned it into this pasta dish, and it was unbelievable. It may be the best seafood pasta dish that I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah. They also had a ceviche in there as well, and then a really slow cooked lamb. And basically, we tried all of them. We ordered like, you know, four or five different dishes, and we just shared them. The good thing about fine dining in Greece generally, and particularly at this place, is that usually they're quite small, all of the, you know, all of the dishes. These are not. These are proper portions, and they're just done in a way that is at a much higher level, a much a much better. You know, it's just a better level all around, and the experience in general, the table service, the wine, the way everything was set up, it was unbelievable. Never thought that I would say that that fine dining would have been at the top of my list in Greece. Because usually it's all about the tipuradika, the mesodopolia, the tavernes, and all that sort of thing. That's where the charm is. This blew a lot of that expectation out of the water. They did such a great job there that night. And, yeah, can't speak highly enough of the food. Fantastic.
Yeah. No, good call out. Even my brother-in-law said the same thing. He's an Italian background. He's a chef as well. So he's used to fine dining. And he said he's had the best meal ever. In Sivota, it was called Mega Amorts. It was another beach restaurant attached to the beach. Amazing. He had same sort of thing. It was a prawn linguine pasta, and I'd never seen him rave about how good it was. Okay, this is the best one I've ever had. I said, really? That's a massive call from you.
Yeah.
So this is another thing I've noticed in Greece. The produce has improved, its quality, customer service improved, and businesses are going back. Like I just said, even our small town of Igoumenitsa, Grimaldi are investing in the area. Euro Prawns are, Australian, Greek Australians going back investing in the area.
It's good signs.
And even Thessaloniki, I met some people on a bus as well, and they were talking about what's happening in Thessaloniki with the IT space and tech companies going there as well. So definitely a place that's on the rise with investment as well.
Yeah. All good signs. I mean, just to sort of tie it all up, what a trip. I mean, it was such a great experience to be over there this year and to be able to meet up over there. We did have big plans to do episodes over there, didn't we? But we were just so busy, and we were so tired from all the fun we were having. It just never eventuated, did it?
Yeah, no, true. Look, and it makes you think, we put a lot of effort in these podcasts. It sounds kind of easy. We thought, oh, yeah, we'll do that. When we got there, it's a lot of work.
It is.
There's a lot of work behind these things. And, we thought, oh, fuck it. We're on holidays. Let's have a break. We deserve a break as well.
So we'll just recap when we get back.
Yeah.
We did go with high hopes. But look, there's so many more stories to take out of this. And they're certain to come out over the coming weeks and months and towards the back end of this season. I mean, the plan for us at the end of the day is to pretty much do what we did last year, which is go to the end of this year, continue to bring episodes to you. We've got some really good episodes lined up for us. So we're getting straight back into it every couple of weeks, as was the cadence before we jetted off. We're back in a big bad way. We're going to be bringing you more and more Greek stories, Greek diaspora stories on individuals, topics, all sorts of stuff. There's no end to it, is there, Nick?
No, definitely not. And look, apologies for the people that we haven't got back to as well, through our socials, through our emails. We'll try and get back to you. And we did get a lot of requests from, what was our last episode? The genocide with
Dr.
Panayiotis Diamandis. So, yeah, we got your feedback on that. We'll definitely get him back on board. And everyone else we haven't got back to, we will get back to you. So apologies for that. But, hey, we're on a break. It's Greek time.
Yeah, that's it.
We wanted a bit of time off. Yeah,
can't wait to keep keep doing this again.
Yeah, definitely. Look, and it's good to be back. You know, it's good to be back sitting here as well and telling stories. And look, now that we've had a few drinks, all the stories are popping in my head. But look, I think we said enough for today. But it's great to be back.
It is 100%. It is. It's good to see your face. And I hadn't seen you since you left Corfu. So walking through that door today, good to see you, brother.
It was. Anyway, should we wrap it up?
We should. Well. Great discussion. Great way to kick it back off. Hopefully we're not too depressed after all this. But look, uzotalk@outlook.com is the email. Make sure you're following us on social media. Send us your emails at uzotalk and at @uzo_talk on Instagram. Nick Athanasiou, mate, it is wonderful to be back.
Tom, you legend. Great to have you back, mate. Thank you, everyone.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Ακολουθήστε μας στο Soundees, στο Spotify, στο Apple Podcasts και στο Google Podcasts.